The following program is an MLWRadio.com production.
Matt Boo!
Media Productions. You remembered them fondly, and then they were gone. And now you want to know who, what, where, when, why.
We having fun, yeah.
Why It Ended with Robbie E. and Matt Coon.
It is that day again. Thanks, guys, for tuning in. Hashtag Why It Ended Wednesday. We are back on another episode of Why It Ended, and we are fresh off Brutus the Barber Beefcake. And if you couldn't get enough of him last week, Matt, we're bringing him back again this week.
And you know, Robbie, and here's why. Because the feedback we got, just go to the Twitter. I don't want to rehash these things, but people were not happy. People weren't happy with Brutus. And there's some people even not happy with us, you know, for us doing our jobs. But Brutus said he'd make it up to us and he'd give us another interview. And we're going to have him on at the end of today's show, which is an interview with Tugboat, the Shockmaster, Typhoon, Uncle Fred, Fred Ottman, one of the, you know, historic figures in wrestling history.
Yeah, so you're kind of getting a two for one today. And just to touch on that a little bit more, I mean, this was the first any kind of negativity I feel like we've gotten over a podcast on social media. And just to clear the air, I mean, I don't know about you, Matt, but I have, you know, the little interaction I've had with Brutus prior to our interview, I mean, he just always kind of seemed the same. I mean, he just kind of seemed like he wasn't feeling it and he was just relaxing at home on the couch. I didn't take him to be, you know, what fans were thinking, that he was so out of it or whatever. And, you know, they thought we knew that. I didn't think anything of it.
Yeah, and that's kind of maybe fair warning. We're not here to make anybody look bad, but not putting out the show is not really an option for us. You know, we have listeners that listen to us every week, and they expect a show, and we do our best to give you the best show, and that's all we can
try.
Do. You know, and speaking of fans, man, I went to SummerSlam weekend this past weekend, and I ran into a couple fans. One fan I ran into sitting next to me at SummerSlam and was a fan of Why It Ended. And then, Robbie, I ran into a couple guys at the Bruce Pritchard show. I was outside smoking a cigarette.
I know who these guys are.
I was outside smoking a cigarette, and I see these two guys get out of a car wearing really tight t-shirts and really tight jeans, and big muscular fellas. And I introduced myself, and they freaked out, and they had to take a picture of me, and then they sent it to you. And Robbie, who were those two guys?
Yeah, I wasn't happy when in my group text with Zack Ryder and Curt Hawkins, I got the picture of you and them. It kind of, the fact that they got to meet you first, and just the fact that I know they were burying me to you, kind of was just ruined my afternoon that day.
It was the best, because as soon as I said, I'm Matt Coon, you know, Hawkins or Brian Myers goes, I just got chills. And then Zach goes, Robbie hasn't even met you yet, has he? And I go, no. He go, we got to get a picture. Like, it wasn't even like a fan going up and said, let's get a picture. Zach's like, we got to get a picture. And we sent it to you, and I just waited. I waited, and then you just sent me the picture, and I laughed and laughed.
Yeah, and of course, that's now your profile picture. Thanks. Don't put you and your co-host together, of course, but those two guys.
Maybe we can get a picture together, but I'll tell you where we can get a picture together. At the StarCast live show of Why It Ended, on Sunday, September 2nd.
That's right, because not only are we going to have a panel of guests that we're interviewing live, but I think the coolest thing for the hardcore Why It Ended fans that are going to be there is the fact that they get to see Matt Coon and Robbie on stage together for the first time ever and the first time they meet each other.
It's going to be pretty amazing. And, you know, it's a Sunday after All In, but StarCast goes strong all day long. There'll be signings by the Young Bucks. There's going to be a lot of different events going on. And one of the events, I think the highlight event, is the Why It Ended live show. So make sure, guys, to get your registration for StarCast up. And hopefully, if you run into me or Robbie, stop by and say hi. We'd love to talk to you.
Yep, you can get my autograph, Matt's autograph. We'll be doing a signing after.
And guys, don't forget about our Patreon page. More people are signing up every day. And you know why? Because we are putting out a bonus episode. By the time you hear this, there's a bonus episode up just for our Patreon members. And also, you guys have been getting the interviews like 4 or 5 days early.
Yeah, you were caught up. You're getting your interviews early. You're getting a monthly bonus episode. And then on top of that, you are helping out one of the greatest podcasts in pro wrestling history, Wide Ended. But on a serious note, we really do appreciate it. And, you know, me and Matt work hard to give you guys an awesome podcast, and we want to keep doing that for free. And, you know, the MLW Network and myself and Matt Kuhn, we are really appreciative of you guys.
Absolutely. Make sure to check it out at patreon.com/whyitended. And
on top of that, also this coming weekend, you could see me tomorrow night, Thursday, in Malden, Massachusetts for UFO Wrestling. And then Friday and Saturday, I'll be in Atlantic City for a special dinner Friday night and a signing Saturday afternoon at the convention. There's going to be a ton of wrestlers there. It's going to be huge. And then Sunday, I leave for vacation to Playa del Carmen with my family, Matt.
Hey, that sounds awesome. And I got to ask you this, though. You have these great appearances. People should always see you wrestle. Are you the NWA champion right now?
Do I ever win, Matt? I'm no. Pretty sure you know the answer to that. It'd be all over my Twitter and Instagram. I'd be blowing it up. I'd be sending you. I've already would have posted a picture of me naked with the title over me. You know that.
Yeah, well, maybe next time. You know, but make sure to go out and see Robbie. But now,
let's get into Fred Ottman, followed by Brutus Beefcake, next on Why It Ended.
Stop using your hand.com.
Now, of course, you know by now about our great sponsor, Pleasure Products USA. They are a huge supporter of Why It Ended and also your online destination for innovative quality and affordable items geared towards men's sexual pleasure. As you know, or you probably should know, their signature product is the 3V Starlet Stroker. That's right, the 3V Starlet Stroker. It has an amazing, realistic internal texture, multiple vibration settings, and for the finishing maneuver, an actual voice of an adult film star is recorded to the device to make more than the crowd pop. Now, if you're not sure about this, and this is all new to you, check this out. You can try a free, that's right, a free stroker. All you have to do is just pay the shipping and handling of $6.95. For just $6.95 shipping and handling, you can get a free stroker. All you got to do is go to pleasureproductsusa.com/promo. That's slash promo. And enter the coupon code FISTBUMP. So whether you're going to get the 3V Scarlet Stroker, or you just want to dip your toe in the water, so to speak, with this free stroker for only $6.95 shipping and handling, make sure to check out our good friends at StopUsingYourHand.com. Now remember, to get that free stroker, go to pleasureproductsusa.com/promo, and the coupon code is FISTBUMP. That's pretty funny. But you know what's not funny? Pleasure Products USA, StopUsingYourHand.com. Today. All right, guys, joining us now is someone I think we all remember, whether he was Tugboat or Typhoon, of course, the Shockmaster, Uncle Fred. Fred Ottman's here today. How you doing there, sir?
Great. Give you one, man.
Hey, Matt was hoping that you would make that for him. Can you make that sound one more time, Fred? Hey, you know what's funny, man? I actually, when we met last year for the first time, when we were in Syracuse, New York, with Scott Wilder, I gotta say, bro, you are like 100%, 24/7, always in a good mood, always positive. Is that just a show, or are you really that happy all the time?
No, man, I try to, man. You gotta live every day like it's a Friday, every night like it's a Saturday night, and you'll be happy.
Matt, you gotta see, like, we're at the table and he is like having the time of his life no matter what is going on. It's hilarious.
That's awesome, because I've noticed sometimes,
and Robbie will attest, I am inappropriate many times.
Well, that's true.
Well, this is the right show for you then.
Hey, you know what? You know, throw them stones, that's it.
So, Fred, were you a wrestling fan growing up?
Oh, man, I was a wrestling fan since I was a kid, man. My life, you know, I've been working full-time since I'm 11, you know, had jobs, odds and then jobs and everything. But, you know, my life was like, you wake up on Saturday morning down. I was born and raised in Miami, and we have championship wrestling from Florida here. Dusty Rhodes, the American Dream, baby, you know what I'm saying? The Funk, the Brothers, baby, you know what I'm saying? Everybody, all the A to the Z gimmicks. Gordon Sully was the announcer, you know, you come, you watch the car, wake up, have some cereal, watch some cartoons, and then around 11 o'clock, Championship Wrestling from Florida would come on, and then after the show was over, boom, out the door and playing football, baseball, playing with the kids in the neighborhood, man. That was my life.
What kind of job did you have at 11 years old?
Man, I was doing everything from cutting grass, helping my dad. My dad was a spray painter, aircraft mechanic. I did a whole lot of different things, man.
You were a hustler even back then, man.
Yeah, I mean, I eventually worked on airplanes when I came out of high school because there was a program down there where you could earn your A&P tickets. And, I was working several different aircraft-related jobs, and then I wound up working with Eastern Airlines, which is now, it's just now coming back small down here. But I worked with them while I was going to college. And plus, I was my days off, I was working in bars.
You were bouncing?
Bouncing worked up to where I was working in management, the whole nine yards. I eventually, when I was wrestling, that's what took me off the road. I had three children. I wanted to come off the road, and I wound up buying, I've owned three or four different nightclubs. Actually had a couple of strip clubs at different times.
So of course you're a big guy. You've probably always been a big guy. How did people come to you for wrestling, or did you pursue training to become a wrestler?
Well, actually, I was a big fan and everything, but I never thought, you know, I mean, it's not what I went to college for. You know, I went to college to be a commercial artist. I wanted to get, you know, learn and get into advertising and have different aspects in that. But where I used to train in Coral Gables, Florida, some of the guys would come there when they were in town. They wrestled either at the Miami Beach Convention Center or they were wrestled down in Coconut Grove near City Hall. There was a Dinner Key Auditorium back in the day. And then they wrestled also up in Fort Lauderdale. But when they were in Miami, there's a few of the guys. And actually, the guys that piqued my interest was two guys, the Fabulous Kangaroos, back in the day. You know, I come from a lower income family when I grew up, you know. And I didn't get to see my first live show until I was like 16, 17 years old. And man, it was just the most incredible thing. I was with a bunch of guys in high school that wrestled with me in high school and played football with me. And we went to the Miami Beach Convention Center where they used to film the Jackie Gleason show back in the day. And man, I went in there and man, he was a tall, thin Andre the Giant back then. The Briscoe brothers were standing by the curtain and we were right by where they were, man. And I'm like, oh my God, I couldn't believe it. I mean, Boris Malenko, who was later the guy that trained me, he was there. He was like one of my favorite heels. I mean, incredible. I mean, it was just, you know, just so many different, they had great managers and there was great wrestlers and it was just incredible. The atmosphere was just phenomenal.
So when you left that building, is that when you said, like, I definitely want to do this? I could do this?
Well, next time I was in the gym, when they were back in town again, the Kangaroos were in the gym. They go, you know, they were talking to me. They're like, you ever thought about doing this wrestling? I said, well, I wrestled. I played football. I wrestled a little amateur, you know, keep me in shape when I was in the off season when we weren't playing ball in high school and that. I says, well, you know, I was working with, I had a great job. Great benefits and stuff, and I'm like working in the airline industry. I'm like, well, you know, I mentioned, he says, well, you know, Malenko has a school up in Fort Lauderdale. He says it would, you know, it wouldn't be on the weekend because he had a school up in Tampa, too. And he was like, so I said, oh, they got me, you know. I went up, drove up one weekend, and I went there to take an audit to school and check it out, man. And the guys were awesome, you know, the students. His sons were there, Dean and Joe Malenko, who were incredible guys. And then there was Malenko, and Malenko was like a second dad to me and most of the guys that, you know, trained under him. I mean, so yeah, next thing you know, the bug bit me, and I was going there on the weekends and everything. And eventually down the road, I moved to Tampa. You know, my parents were already living up here in North Florida, but I moved to Tampa so that I'd have to be able to train 5-6 days a week. They had a mattress factory right across from the stadium where the Bucks play over here, and a place called Drew Park right by the airport. And he had a school in the back of an old mattress factory. I mean, the outside of the building is covered with tar paper. I mean, it was hot as a bitch inside, you know, and... you know, but a lot of great guys, and he trained a whole lot of good guys. I mean, you know, he trained Kane. Kane has gone through his school. I mean, of course, his sons were both accomplished wrestlers. Buddy of mine, Bob Cook, he wrestled a lot, NWA and stuff like that.
Back then, did they take anyone? Like, would they accept anyone to train, or was it selective who they would choose?
It was hardcore. You broke in there, and first of all, you were doing a ton of calisthenics and everything like that. And here, I was training in the gym in the sometimes once or twice a day. And then I was a powerlifter too when I was younger. And then I would go there, and then we would train for 2-3 hours, easy. You know, and first coming in there, you're doing Hindu squats. You're doing, you know, they a lot of guys, you do a deck of cards where, you know, different suits and different numbers for either squats or push-ups, and you throw the card down, and whatever that card came up and whatever the exercise is, that, you know, red or black, would represent one or the other. And you know, you'd go through ED 300 or more reps before, you know, just blowing up, you're doing all that stuff. Then you're getting in the ring, and you know, before you got it started doing all that stuff, you're stretching out, you know, plus you're going through some drills and everything like that. And, you know, depending on your level of experience as far as wrestling ability goes, you know, you get in there and you'd be working on new holds and new moves and stuff like that. And, you know, just it was a great atmosphere. It was a great atmosphere. 1-2-3 Kid, another, you know, Xbox, another graduate. And, I mean, there's a lot of great talent. Ricky Santana, Paul Diamond, who was Kato with Orient Express and Fuji. I mean, there was a lot of good guys. And he was Paul Diamond was a soccer player for the Rowdy before he got into pro wrestling.
Well, you definitely, you definitely got a lot out of that training with Boris Malenko, I'm sure, and you wrestled, you know, in Georgia, man. And you did Texas and Tennessee, but in 88, where a lot of people became aware of you, including the WWF, you actually got to return to Florida and wrestled in that territory, kind of in the dying days of the territory system. What was the scene like in?
Oh yeah, yeah. I wrestled two of them, Portland there for a short stint. It was awesome down here. That's when I. First time I ever got, I watched Dusty on TV, and then I wound up actually working with him. And then while I was in the territory here in Florida, we did a big, huge show at the fairgrounds here. It was a hell of a house. Funk, Terry Funk was there. I mean, just Bam Bam Bigelow. It was just a ton of talent, you know. And a bunch of guys came over from Austria, and I got booked because at that show. Go and work with Otto Vaughn. Otto was there scouting for talent for his promotion over there. And I got to work over there. So, I mean, that was my first time going out of the country.
It was awesome.
Incredible. In Germany, Otto, they would run a building 30 to 40 days straight every single night and sell out every single night.
Who was on those tours with you?
Oh, my God. Guy that became TM News was over there. there was guys from, there was Giant Haystacks from England. There was, Fit Finley was there. Got a lot of guys from Scotland, Ireland, England. A lot of guys from Europe, Germany, and Austria, France, Italy. I mean, I've got so many licks to the head. I mean, remembering everybody who was there was just incredible. I mean, and they were all, I mean, just tremendous, you know. And it's good to, it was every territory that, even after I left wrestling school, every territory I had the opportunity to, in a lot of places, because you were in a territory, you could work with experienced guys, and there were some guys are assholes, but then there was guys, you know, that are willing to give you, you know, and help you along. They've seen that you were legitimately had that love for this business, and it was, you know, really, really, really good. I mean,
so what do you have any stories that you remember when you were starting out like that of guys that were assholes, someone who gave you a hard time?
Oh, I hate to throw guys under the bus. I'd rather praise guys, you know, for being so nice to me, you know. I mean, I got in Texas, I worked under four different bookers there. Colonel Buck Robley was one. The Guerreros, Chavo was one there, you know. When it was there, there was so much talent coming in and out, and then Dallas was sending guys in. That's the first time I got to work with One Man Gang down there, who's a good friend of mine now, too. And, you know, he was just incredible. And, I mean, Bruiser Brody was coming in and out for us, and he was just a great guy. A guy named Al Madrill. I mean, there was just a laundry list. There was guys from Mexico. Jose Lothario was there. Shawn Michaels. Nick Kaninsky, who was one of Gene Kaninsky's sons, who was an incredible amateur, him and his brother Kelly, who was working up in Dallas. Black Gordman from Mexico was there with Goliath. And what was really cool, too, it was San Antonio. The Mexican guys used to do lucha at one of the flea markets out there. And so if we had a day where we didn't have to be somewhere till later or was close to the town, that I'd get up with a couple of guys and we'd go, you know, watch a lucha show, man, because it was just a great experience, you know, and watching these guys work. I'm a big Lucha Underground fan too, so in case you guys don't know.
Oh yeah.
You know?
So but, you're doing all these shows and you're getting experience. How many actual years was it until you made it to WWF?
Oh man. First went in there about the middle of 89 is when
And what year did you start?
Oh, man.
85?
Probably 83. You know, I was doing, Malenko was running shows here, and I was doing those shows, but I've been working about 28, almost 30 years. And I tell people, like, minimal 300 days a year, because even with the territories, you were working 6, sometimes 7 days a week, and sometimes you did double shots. When I worked with Vince, I there's many times we do double shots, you know?
How did the call from WWF come about?
Huh? Pardon?
How did the call from WWF come about? Like, how did you get hooked up with them?
Well, actually, when I was working in Florida, I went overseas and was working in Austria. When I was there for 10 days, because it was all about working for the championship, working auto. When I came back, the cool thing here in Florida, the office, I mean, Mike Graham, all parts of it, you know, Gordon Soley, all of them, and Dusty and the other guys, Steve Kern was there. And they were all part of the office. And they came out. When I came back, I came by the building, let them know I was back in town. And they told me, says, well, they pulled me in the office and they had a little talk with me. And they're like, while you're gone, you had Kevin Sullivan had called from WCW, and the office called from WWF, and I was like, "Oh my god!" You know, and
they go, all this going on at once.
Yeah, and they had talked with me and everything, and my whole career was aimed. I always wanted to go to WWF, you know, but I was like, "Man, you know." When they told me that, I was like, man, I don't think I'm good enough, you know, as long as I've been working. I was like, I was a self-doubter, you know, feeling that I had, you know, because both companies had the absolute best from every territory, you know, that, you know, and even international guys that they were bringing in and out from Japan and, you know, from Mexico and Canada, you know, and other parts of the country, of the world, you know. So I was like very, very apprehensive, you know, and they sat with me and goes, you know, we're going to tell you what to do or whatever you have to, you know, that's kind of one of those things where you have to look with your heart. And, you know, I said, well, you know, and it was no disrespect to WCW or Kevin, love Kevin to death. But I was like, you know, I'm like, oh, they're calling me now for WWF. I'm like, I don't want to stick it in their face, go somewhere and hopefully get more polished. So I'm like, you know, well, you got to roll the dice, you know, and I went there, you know.
So how does it come about that a guy, Big Steel, you were called, U.S. Steel, you were called.
Yeah.
How does it come about where they say, guess what? Your name is Tugboat. You have striped pants and you're going to do a whistle. Like, how was that pitched to you and what was your reaction? Hey guys, we know we have a lot of male listeners, and for those guys, do you remember the days that you were always ready to go?
Well, now you can increase your performance and get that extra confidence in bed. So listen up, it's bluechew.com, and guys, that is blue like the color blue.
It's a crazy thing, it's a chewable, and it's available from bluechew.com. And it's got the same FDA-approved active ingredients that you find in Viagra and Cialis. You know they work. And like I said, it's an easy-to-take chewable.
Yeah, you can take it anytime. You can take it a day. You can take it at night, full stomach. And since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill. So you can be ready whenever an opportunity arises. Because let me just tell you something. An opportunity can arise at any time.
Well, for almost everybody except me. But let me tell you this. If it did... If in fact it
did,
you know, all I got to do is go online because Blue Chew is prescribed online and it ships right to the door in a discreet package, you know, so there's no like in-person doctor visit. You don't have to be embarrassed or have that awkwardness waiting in the pharmacy. And it's a much easier way to kind of be always ready on the go.
And we all know, Matt, that you probably have had that awkward waiting in the pharmacy visit before, but nonetheless, Blue Chews are made in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they are cheaper than a pharmacy, which works out really good for your pocket.
You know, and it's, guys, this is a no-brainer. You know, if you've always kind of considered something, you know, to help you in this way, you know, Blue Chew is the way to go. You go to bluechew.com and get your first shipment. Guess how much it is, Robbie?
How much is it,
Matt? It is free. It is free when you use our special promo code, Robbie. All you gotta do is pay a measly $5 shipping for a free shipment of Blue Chew.
And that special promo code Robbie, R-O-B-B-I-E, and notice how they made the code after my name and not Matt's.
Well, they actually want people to buy it, and don't, you know, and don't just take our word for it. I know many people who have used it, and they love the Blue Chew. Again, that's Blue Chew, BLUE Chew.com. Promo code Robbie to try it free. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, faster choice. And man, we appreciate them sponsoring the podcast and being supporters of Why It Ended. And make sure to go to bluechew.com. What's the promo code again?
R-O-B-B-I-E, Robbie.
It's amazing. He has to spell out his own name. Try it today. Bluechew.com, promo code Robbie.
I'm a college graduate.
Well, first, when I came in there, I worked six, when I did go in there and I started working, the first 6 to 8 months, I was wrestling as Big Steel Man, you know, and
as a heel.
Worked, you know,
as a,
and I was working around. I think, you know, seeing how the people and the people's reactions to me and all that stuff.
You're working as a heel with Slick as your manager, right?
Slick was my manager. Yes, he was. Great guy. Actually, when I was Big Steel Man here in Florida, DDP was my manager, along with the Red Rooster, Sir Oliver Humperdinck. They, like, co-managed me. I got some cool videos. You can look at some funny videos, like DDP in the Porsche with about six or eight Hooters girls, and he's running down. We filmed on a runway out of the airport, and I'm pulling it down the airport. It's one of those funny things. He did vignettes with me in the gym, lifting heavy weights and stuff, and all that stuff, especially when we got to work in the program with Dusty. But they came to me the one day, and they go, they called me in the office at the TV, and they, as far as the tugboat goes, and they called me in there, and they're talking with me, you know, Pat Patterson, Vince. A few other people were there, and he's like, we came up with this gimmick, this tugboat gimmick, you know, and Robbie E can tell you, as goofy as I am, you know, I'm like, they're like, you know, you gotta love what you do, and you gotta, when they put a gimmick on you, bad or horrible, if they ask you, do you like this, and you accept it, you know, accepting it means, you have to give 150% into that gimmick. They give you the TV time. They give you the, you know, the exposure and all that costs, you know, thousands, hundreds of thousands by the time things are gone. True. You know, to get you over, but you have to get you over. And it's like that, ad, you know, like I can put a dress on a pig, but it's still a pig kind of deal.
Yeah. No, but totally, I agree. You got to put all into it. I always say, if they ask me to be a ballerina, I'll do it. And I think, Matt, you'll agree, I'd be a hell of a ballerina, wouldn't I?
You would be an amazing ballerina. And it's a great lesson, too, because a lot of people talk about the Red Rooster, and a lot of people feel that he did not embrace that gimmick or that character the way that, say, you were given, honestly, a gimmick that was just as silly and just as kind of, you know, outside the box, but you embraced it and made it work to the point that you became Hulk Hogan's buddy on air. I think that's a great lesson for all wrestlers, really.
Well, I'll tell you, when they asked me about it, I'm like, let me get this straight, you know, and I still watch cartoons, guys. I go, like, I get to be a cross between Brutus and Popeye in one character. I'm on, you know, that's my deal. I can be as, you know, I can kick ass and be as goofy as I want to be, you know. And they go, you know, I mean, at one point, they just gave me that deal, and we were wrestling in a small shop before Pittsburgh in Johnstown, Pennsylvania, which is a small little hockey arena up there. We're working, a house show, you know, and the next day we were going to be in Pittsburgh. So Chiefs Jay Strongbow and Renee and Rene Goulet, I think, or Sarge, were the agent. And, Strongbow comes up to me and goes, big man, Vince wants you, know that song, When the Moon Hits Your Eye, like a big pizza pie at Tamari? I said, yeah. He goes, we're here in this small building, Vince wants you to go out there and sing that deal and see how the crowd reacts. I don't know if it was a rib or whatever. I'm like, you can't embarrass me, man. I'm like, I go, no problem. So needless to say, when it was my match, it was like second or third, I go out there and I start belting the deal. And all the boys are at the curtain and they're all laughing their balls off. I mean, you know, and I just fed right into it, man. You know, I don't know if they wanted to see if I was going to pitch a bitch and not want to do it or what, you know, but I just, you know, went with the flow.
What was the atmosphere like at that time in the WWF locker room? Did everybody get along? Or, did people give you a hard time because you were new and getting a push?
Oh, it was good. You know, when you're on the road that much with each other, away from your family, you're on the road with your, you know, with the guys more in your family, and all that testosterone is just a flowing. There was lots of rhythm going on. There was days when there was miserable people in the locker room, you know, but there was good days. And, certain guys travel with certain guys. And, you know, it was one of those kind of deals.
Who'd you travel with when you first got there?
When I got the swing of things, I traveled myself until I felt comfortable with different guys. But I, when I was with Quake and Jimmy, one of the Hebners or two of the Hebners, we'd all ride together if we were booked on the same towns, because you remember they were booking three towns a night. And I'm easy going. I'd ride with Rodney, Yoko.
Oh yeah.
Some of the Samoans and Jimmy Snuka. I'd love to ride with. I rode a lot with. At different points, I rode with Warrior. I rode with Axol. Iron Sheik was the worst to ride with.
Iron Sheik was the worst.
He wouldn't drive. People didn't like. Some people didn't like to room with him, but he was a good guy. I liked Sheik, baby. He was always funny.
What was a young Ultimate Warrior like when you were riding with him and getting to know him as a person? There's a big disconnect with people that say he was kind of hard to get to know, or some people didn't like him at all. What was he like for you when he was coming?
He would tend to be kind of a loner, but you got to think about the, I thought he was a good guy. He's a very serious, very, straightforward kind of guy, but I thought he was a good guy, some people don't feel, polar opposite of that, but he was a good guy. I mean, he had to get his workouts in. He had to eat, his certain meals and certain things. And when you're on the road, a lot of times it's hard to find good food or you're on such a time schedule. You're out in the morning, you're catching a 5 or 6 o'clock flight. You may have to fly cross country, get off 2-3 places to get to where you want. I've flown into Anchorage, Alaska, wrestled, come out and catch a red eye to San Francisco for a show the next day. If you're booked overseas on a tour, the TV dates and stuff like that. It was hectic. It was, and I'm sure it's still fairly hectic. My oldest son works for WWE now. He does television production with them. He's a referee, hell of a referee. He loves the business, and he works both with the main roster and NXT also.
What's his name?
Berkeley Ottman.
Okay.
He's timekeeper. He's when he was first in there, when Triple H brought him up from when he was working, he started with FCW developmental and then went to NXT. And he went through wrestling school, and he's a tall, skinny kid. Thank God he's good looking like my ex, but not a big guy, but a good guy, very, smart. I mean, been blessed with good children, all three of my children from my first marriage. But he loves the business. Like I said, he loves the business, and he works hard, and I pushed him toward that. He wanted to be a referee, and he was doing that. And I was like, you're there with the best. They're sending down the main roster that does the TV to do the FCW and the NXT. I said, television production, brother. He started when he was in high school until he turned 18 and he could go through training. He was working in South Tampa at FCW and was, you name it. He was doing, he was a gopher, man, doing it. Set the rings, tore them down, would go out to the road on the weekend when they did the shows out of town. He was blessed and working around his, Dusty was his god, my oldest one's godson. He was Dusty's godson, and Steve Kern, and so many of the other guys who were working there, you know. So he worked under good people, you know, and he listened, you know, to them also. So, you know, he was blessed, you know, to be in that crowd. And me, a lot of good talent that went up to the main roster.
Hey, Fred, at one time you were Hulk Hogan's best friend on air. What was that like?
Brother, you know, the Hulkster, I mean, I still love him to death, man. He's been very good to a lot of guys in the business. A lot of guys owe a lot of things to him, you know, and he's a warm-hearted, good guy, a legitimate shoot good guy. And I know that most of the people out there, if they've ever met him, could, you know, kind of go along with what I'm saying. And it was an honor. You know what I'm saying? Here's this guy here that I watched him as Thunder Lips and then proceeded, you know, and I watched him, you know, through the wrestling magazine, you know, and wind up with WWF, you know, and Hulk Hogan. And he was just incredible. He had that personality, and I mean, the people sucked to him like a magnet, you know. And to be there with him, I thought was the most, you know, it's like Midas with the golden touch. To be in that place and that time, and me being so new into the WWF, it was just amazing. And I feel blessed, and I, you know, all the guys that I worked with, but him especially, you know, he's just, you know, him, Jimmy Hart. I mean, just amazing. Just amazing, you know, he's just tremendous. That's all I could tell you. You know, I don't want to suck his behind too much, but he is phenomenal. You know, I was not, you know, but I feel that he was really nice to me. I worked on Thunder in Paradise when he shot that show, with a bunch of the other guys. And I mean, but him as a human being is just a great guy, you know, great, great guy.
When you were positioned that way as a top face, you know, you're Hogan's best friend, yeah. you're making pleas on air and getting people to send in cards and letters, come back Hogan, you know, you were pretty hot. Was there any talk of you getting a title run with the IC belt or maybe even the big championship at some point? Was that a dream of yours?
You know, I just came in, laced my boots and do what they told me to do. And it's always a surprise. You know, getting paired with Quake was a surprise. You know, I always looked at things like that. You know, the opportunity. You know what I'm saying? That it's always the office. You know, with whatever, you know, the final get-go is, it's the office.
Sure.
So, you know, you pray, you hope, and you want. Because the longer, the more things that you're involved in, the longer you work. You know what I'm saying? You can only ride the wave for so long. If that makes any sense.
Absolutely. There's a pretty famous, or pretty, you know, it's getting to be famous story that I don't know if you're aware of, but Bruce Pritchard tells a story about before you mm-hmm. turned heel with Earthquake, that there was some talk of turning you heel with you know, Sheik and Slaughter and turning you into Sheik Tugboat. Are you aware of that? Is that something you've heard? Or
Yeah, I didn't find it out till years later. George Steele had told me about it at one point in time. That, you know, like, you know, baby, oh, Sheik Tugboat. With the funny shoes.
Do you think that would...
I mean, it would be cool.
That would have been an interesting little run for you, huh?
Yeah, it would have been pretty funny. Actually, a couple of friends of mine that are artists, some with Marvel and some with a couple other comic book titles, Boom Comics, they did a couple of pictures and stuff like that, and I thought that was pretty funny. I have them. I'm a big comic toy guy, you know, so...
I think if anyone would have pulled that character off and made it their own, it would be you.
It would have been pretty cool, you know. I'm glad that Slaughter is. Matter of fact, I picked up my Slaughter action figure with the Sheik headdress on at a Walmart. I just, oh my God, I didn't even know they made it.
It probably was good at the time because that Slaughter angle ended up having so much real heat out in the world that it was it might have been better off not going down that road.
Oh, that was a hot topic, you know what I'm saying? And that's why they were capitalizing on it, you know? When you think about it, it's a dangerous time at any time, you know? To do something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. The one thing is, you mentioned Dusty Rhodes a few times, and you've been an in-law of his. Can you talk about what it was like to go from being someone who looked up to Dusty Rhodes to being a colleague of his, and then to being a family member of his, of the legend Dusty Rhodes? Tell us a little something about your relationship with Dusty and Dusty himself.
Well, I never even knew my first wife was related to him until the end, before I was I'd gotten engaged, because she worked in the office here in Florida, and it was the best. I mean, you know, me as a fan, a big Mark, you know, for Dusty Rhodes, growing up with him and everything, and he's such an awesome guy, you know, and you know, I love Cody, I love you know, Gold Dust, you know, Dustin, you know, he's awesome. Dusty was just a hell of a guy. Here's another guy that did so much for a lot of guys in the business. It wasn't just about Dusty Rhodes. Dusty Rhodes was always going to be Dusty Rhodes, and, you know, that larger-than-life personality and the brains for this business, the mind as far as angles and different things. Just amazing, you know, I mean, just amazing, you know, and him and Vince always had a good rapport, even when he wasn't there, you know, in that office. I mean, he's just, you know, Vince realized that, you know, I mean, just crazy, you know, but Vince also, you know, here's another guy that always surrounded himself with top talent, you know, that, you know, he's not one man that calls all the shots, you know, and at one point, I mean, it was almost like, it was like a committee of many guys, you know, putting angles and stuff together, you know, other than, you know, Hogan, who had a large portion of the input on the things he was doing, you know? So, I mean, crazy thing, man. That's all I could tell you. It's a hell of a business.
Did Dusty give you any good advice or any, you know, things to work on or any kind of input into your career or your work as a wrestler?
Other than, baby, never tell him your real age, baby. Never tell him your real age.
How much younger did you have to pretend to be? Did he say?
I've dyed my hair my whole career. My hair has always been gray, more leaning toward the white now, but I had premature gray hair, and so I had to color my hair and my beard, you know, the biggest part of my career when I broke into business. I mean, you know, I don't know if it's a vitamin deficiency or what, you know, or God playing a trick on me, but that was one of those deals. And there was no Just for Men. It was Miss Clairol. And that stuff stinks. I really, really feel bad for women that have to color their hair, because that stuff's nasty. You know, the best thing, I worked on a movie, Mortal Kombat, not the movie, but the TV series for Sci-Fi Network. And they called me when I was working with WCW. And, it was the best thing in the world. I had that mullet for so many years, and I got shaved my head, and they paid me a bunch of extra money for that, and they had prosthetic earpieces and the whole nine yards. So I was like, oh, man, I don't have, other than my mustache, I don't have to dye my hair for a while. I can give it a break. So it was pretty funny.
So from there, you eventually did turn heel, become the Natural Disasters. How did it feel going from being such a big baby face and turning heel? Something you wanted to do? I mean, I know you embrace anything. Were you excited for it? A new challenge?
Oh, I love it all. First of all, they put me with Quake, because when they approached me about that, they were like, I just seen, I had a t-shirt that was coming out that never made it to the full print. They sent me the samples, and then I seen the Hasbro tugboat figure prototype. And I was like, oh my, we just did a photo shoot in Rhode Island. And they thinking I wound up seeing the Hasbro. They always make a double high, larger than life kind of model to get the approval and stuff like that. I have a copy of the blueprint for it. But, you know, then I came back to TV from there. And I got called in the office again, and they go, you know, and I seen all that stuff. I'm like, oh my God, this is, I'm finally getting some really good stuff now. I'm going to have merch and this and that. Anyway, they go, call me in there, and they go, oh, that's when Quaker finished his run, you know, and they're like, we had an idea of putting you together with Quake. What do you think about it? As a tag team. And I love John. He's awesome and just a tremendous guy and great work. I'm like, you gonna tag us? You know, I'm like thinking that both of us can move, and I'm like, we can work like smaller guys can work and get that gimmick over, and you know, and the people be like, wow, you know, both the drop kicking and a good splash, I've come off the top, I've done, you know, different things in my career. And I'm like, oh man, this is, yeah, sure. You know, and I knew that it would be no headache. You know, the thing with having tag partners a lot of times, as Robbie E could probably tell you, is you have to be sometimes, you don't want to be somebody's babysitter. And you don't want to, you know, have to deal with somebody else's, you know, crap.
You want to be on the same page inside and outside of the ring.
Yeah, you know, I want, it's bad enough being on the road a lot, but being on the road with somebody that you have to work with at your side and is a pain in the ass, I ain't on for that, you know? I mean, I love a lot of guys, and I've, you know, dealt with them, and I'm sure you have too, Robbie, with a lot of guys, you know, and they all have, some guys have luggage, you know, but you know, the show must go on. But I, knowing that I would be with a guy that's like me, I mean, me and Quake took our families to Disney World, you know what I'm saying? I got a picture of us on the Dumbo ride with mouse ears on. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, you know, and he accepted me for being as nuts as I'd always get him laughing and giggling. And we had fun, you know? And it makes, you know, taking bumps so much easier when, you know, Dusty, you were asking me about Dusty. He said, I'm Dusty Rhodes out here, but when I go home, when I'm Virgil Run, you know, when I shut that door behind me, you know what I'm saying? I'm at home. That guy is outside the home. You know what I'm saying? When you're in the around the marks and fans and other people, you know, that know you for what you are, and then there's that other inner circle of your family and intimate friends and stuff like that, that know you as this other guy. You know what I'm saying? You got to know where to leave that person, you know? Like you taking your shoe door so you don't mess the carpets up. The same thing with that personality. You put, leave them at the there when you come in.
Well, it was definitely a shift to go from Tugboat to Typhoon. Did you have a preference?
Yeah.
Did you enjoy one more than the other?
No, as I tell people all the time, especially when you get around to the Shockmaster, I love them all, good, bad, or ugly. I've had fun with them, and I still have fun with them, and I've always tried to embrace anything that was on me, even if it didn't work out for the best, you know. I enjoyed them all. I enjoyed every part of the business from the beginning to the end of the, you know, of the business. You know,
I made
a lot of great.
Now that you brought up the Shockmaster, I mean, to go into that, how did you exit from WWF?
Well, actually, when I can't even remember, you know, when they talk dates and places and stuff like that, because I did leave at one point from WWF to open my businesses down in Key West. I had two bars down there, and my brother-in-law was my partner. He wound up getting shot. There was just a lot of different things, and I cannot put times and dates and points of my career together other than the stuff in WWF, because even at one point when Quake left there to go to the WCW, I got a phone call down in Key West from the office to want me to come up and finish his dates, because he was working with Yoko at that point in time. That's when he had left, and then they wanted to bring up, but then they had other plans for me. I found out years later, because I told them I couldn't neglect my businesses. I had too much time, money, and that I came off the road for a reason. I would have kept wrestling, you know, but I decided to go this route, and it didn't work out because it was a successful business and everything like that. But my partner wound up getting shot and killed up here in Tampa. And so it put me in a lurch in a hell of a spot down there where I couldn't get away for a long period of time.
Well, it's hard to transition from that into this, but we're going to try. Clash of Champions 24, you know, everybody's seen it. You come out, there's a 2x4 that's been put around shin level, knee level on the wall that you were supposed to come through.
That's below my kneecap.
You fall over, you're wearing the Stormtrooper helmet. The guys are caught on tape cursing and reacting. What was the first thing that was said to you when you went back in the back after the infamous Shockmaster debut?
I don't know. I felt like getting a case of beer and driving back to home. I walked from the set past Dusty in the gorilla position in the back there, and he was laughing hysterically. He didn't want to hurt my feelings. I love him to death. But, you know, it was one of those deals where, like, when it happened, my grandma's guy gave me the cue, and they didn't gimmick the wall. I had to bust the wall. So the bottom should have been kicked out first and bust that, because that broke like five boards going through that wall. And it was 5/8 sheetrock and had boards every so many inches and the whole nine yards. And I took the bump. My biggest thing was they couldn't mic that mask. It had two little pinholes. Robbie's been, he was at the show with me. I carry the mask. I had the mask that was using that for the show. And people, they'll come up and look, and they're like, I go, they want to do their photo ops. I'm like, you know, you want to wear this thing. Can I? You know, you want to wear it. And they put it on, and they go, you can't see anything in here. I go, there you go. It's like a point, break, and fall kind of deal. So, I mean, that was the thing, you know. He gave me, he says, Fred, you're going to have to, Mike Graham told me, he says, you're going to have to hit this wall hard to go through it. You know, and there was no way to mic the mask. So it was, you know, Ole did the voiceover, you know, and it was a stellar moment in wrestling history.
For sure.
That's all I could tell you.
So it's an interesting name, Shockmaster. Like, it's not your typical wrestling name. It wasn't your tippling wrestling outfit. What were the plans? Let's say the debut went great. Were you going to wrestle in the Stormtrooper mask?
Oh, well, the outfit wasn't the deal. All the Stormtrooper mask was to hide my face because I was off of TV from WWF. I was the mystery partner that Sting was alluding to, the bringing out. Okay? And what I was wearing out there was just a pair of jeans, and actually the long vest that I was wearing belonged to one of the Awesome Kongs. They put it on me at the last minute. They had me take my shirt off. I was in a pair of blue jeans, cowboy boots, and just those two props that I was wearing, because it was actually going to be like the Super Shockmaster. It was like a combination lucha kind of outfit, because if you look at some of the TV tapes, the full wrestling outfit was a hood that would hide my face, just the hair out the top was hanging out, and It was long tights and a butcher top. And it was blue and gold, gold metallic. And it was almost a pretty basically like a comic book kind of character.
So were you going to be continued to be masked as you went into War Games and did that match?
Yeah. I guess that was the deal. You know, and they only ran that, maybe 10, 12 with the outfit. And then they did transition into the Uncle Fred gimmick.
Right.
So it was a stumbling, bumbling construction worker kind of outfit.
I mean,
and that's where it was. Matter of fact, the one promo, I'm at Dusty's house in Georgia, and Young, his daughter, Teal, my niece, and Cody, Young and Cody, were on the couch with some of their friends, and they're pointing at the TV, "That's Uncle Fred! That's Uncle Fred!" You know?
Sure.
As they're watching the video. Yeah.
And you know, you're a good guy. You take it all in good humor, and it's good that you do, because we've talked to some that don't. But at the time, it had to be seen as somewhat of a missed opportunity or a blown chance or, you know, some kind of disappointment from you. Was there a moment where you were just like, man, I just, this was terrible. I just need to quit? Or did you always have a good attitude about it?
You got to have a positive. I mean, it was very disappointing. It was disheartening when it happened, you know, and I get the razz still to this day, you know, but it's one of the most watched that I go, like, you know, I see people and I'm like, we'll be at a Comic-Con, we'll be at a wrestling show or something like that. I'm like, and they bring it up and everything. Some people jump right into it. Some are apprehensive. They're afraid to hurt your feelings. I go, it ain't hurt my feelings. This made me some money. It was the 2016 San Diego Comic-Con show figure. I've owned it, you know, and that's how you have everything you do in the business. It's never going to be perfect. I've seen great superstars screw up. I've seen, remember when, the Texas Tornado, Terry Von Erich was working in World Class. Jump over the ropes, catch his feet on the ropes and fall down. I mean, there's been a lot of guys that have made a lot of mistakes. Mine just happened to be more stellar than most. Especially it was at a live pay-per-view, not a taped one, where you get do-over. You know, I don't know how many shows that you went back to in a day with WWF back in the day. There may be a match on the first hour, and Vince and the powers that be didn't like the way that match went. And I never won a mine, but I've seen other matches where they were moved to the, you know, the third hour or whatever, close to the end, and reshot because, you know, as you know, it's a 3-4 hour experience to be at a TV. You got dark matches, then you got the first hour, you got live TV, then you got the hour after that. So, I mean, it can be very time-consuming, and most of the time when they're doing TVs, they're Mondays and Tuesdays. Well, children have to go to school. So, mom and dad, I mean, you can only keep and watch, no matter how good a fan you are, you can only watch so much stuff. And they got to get them home, get them in bed, you know, and the whole nine yards. And so, the crowd changes, you know what I'm saying? The people are up in the stands as they clear out around ringside. Tickle their way down there and get into the, you know what I'm saying? It's one of those things. So back in the day when they were taping, you know, like some shows went to superstars for video, straight to video wrestling matches and stuff. So, I mean, it was a lot of, you know, it was a busy day. TVs were, you had to be at the building by noon and you got your tickets and you got all these things and that. You were doing promos in individual cells all the way across the back. If you were doing photo shoots for merchandise, if you were doing meet and greet, I mean, it's a busy day doing TV and pay-per-view. Anyway.
So how long did Shockmaster actually last in WCW?
I don't know, man. I don't know, 6 to 8 months. I'm not positive. I'm the guy that did it and I can't remember.
And what was the reason for your eventual exit?
Huh?
What was the reason that you eventually left WCW?
I don't want to get into it too deep. it's when I was working on Thunder in Paradise. I'd been there a week. I'd been in the makeup chair at about between 3 and 4 o'clock in the morning every morning. That's when we were with WCW. We were filming at Universal Studios, and I'd been working on Jimmy and Hogan. Tim, you know, they wanted me to work on the Kismet. It was a 2-hour deal with El Gigante was in it as the big heel, and you know, Chris Lemon and that stuff. They asked me, Jimmy told me Hulk wants you to work on this shot, so he got it okay through the office. But needless to say, I came in at the last day of shooting. And I was wore out, came over to pick up my gear for the stage and that. And there were some things that went on there and everything, and I wound up like, you know what? I mean, you know, when that big, you know, I left. I thought, I say, you know, like I said, I'll throw people under the bus. It was a conflict between me and somebody in the office. A lot of times, you know, you got to be treated right. I treat people the way, you know, I'm treated. You know what I'm saying? It's reciprocal. So it was just something that transpired and I didn't agree with. And I left. That was it. I was done. No ifs, ands, or buts.
There's a lot of talk now, I guess, about back then when Hogan came in. And, you know, yeah. He brought in guys like Hogan's guys and you know, whether it's, you know, Bubba or Beefcake or those guys and Bulldog. Was there a big division in the locker room between kind of the old guard and the guys that were kind of friends of Hogan?
No, I don't think so. You know, no matter where you work or where you work, it's all about if somebody can come in and put asses in the seat. That's the main thing. What that reflects on is you getting a better payoff at the end of the day. You know what I'm saying? It's like you asked me before, do you like to be a good guy? Do you like being a bad guy? I don't care what kind of guy I am, as long as I remember where to send my check, okay, and they remember my name. When you're giving me that payoff. You know, and I'm able to do what I love to do. Wrestling. It's not something, like I said, from the very beginning, it's not what I went to school for. Or what I anticipated, you know, it's something that I loved from a young age, but you know, never something that I would think that I would be able to make a living at, you know, to do something like that. So, you know, my dad always taught me to always have a lot. The more skills you have, the more, you know, the more things you have options as far as. That's why from a young age I worked. I learned. You know, I remember at 11, 12 years old working in a gas station. I was cutting grass, and I worked for an old Polish guy, and I learned all my best cuss words from him. He'd work on like 8 or 10 cars at a time. The hood's up there, be banging his head into the hood latches and all this and that. And I learned all my, you know, my best stuff. I learned how to change an 18-wheel tire. I used to scrape the grease out of the grease traps with my hands. I wasn't afraid to get dirty, and he treated me good, and he educated. And everybody I've always worked for, I've learned from. It's why I always tried to put that into the minds of my children, just like my son is in the business now. You know what I'm saying? The more things that you learn and you're able to do and you're good at what you do and your attitude is good, the more doors it'll open for you. And give you more longevity.
Yep. So, Fred, if promoters want to reach out to you to book you for conventions or signings or anything, how would they go about doing that?
Facebook or, you know, they instant message me and that stuff. I was talking to a guy in Germany today, and I got to send some figures out to because I got, you know, I do personal autograph figures and stuff too from, you know, I have tons of stuff. Like I said, too, I'm a toy collector now. But they can get me through Facebook and Messenger, you know what I'm saying, on Facebook Messenger. And you send a message out, and I'm going to reply to you, you know what I'm saying?
Okay, don't what is that? Under, what's your Facebook afraid. Name under? Just so they know your Facebook name?
Fred Ottman, my real name.
There you go. Well,
and if you pull it up, you'll see a picture of me and my wife on our wedding day. It's the picture for it. It's never changed since I opened the account. And it's all cool. And I enjoyed, like I said, I enjoy it. If you can have me, if you have me come in, I am no. You don't have to bring out the bottle of aspirin and a bottle of liquor. I'm easy on the person. And me and Robbie E got that thing the 25th of August coming up.
Yes, in Atlantic City. Yeah,
it's my first time to Atlantic City. I've been all over the North. I've never been to Atlantic City.
Wow, awesome, man.
Yes, I'm excited about that, man. I get to see you. Axe and Smash are going to be there with Demolition. Scott Wilder's bringing us in. Dangerous Danny Davis, he's going to be there in the house. Yours truly, Tugboat Typhoon and Shockmaster. Shockmaster will be sitting on the table with me. It's going to be awesome, man. There's going to be some other people there. I think it's at the cross section of Boardwalk and Park Place. Is that where it's at, Robbie?
Yeah, it is. And Matt, I think you might need to make the trip down from Virginia for that weekend.
That sounds like a good time, man. On August 25th, yeah. You said, in Atlantic City, big wrestling show with Tugboat in Atlantic City. Well, you know, I gotta thank you there, Fred. Thank you so much for all your time. It's a fascinating story and yeah, really a good...
I love it.
Oh, go ahead.
I'm sorry I babble a lot. I'm sorry.
Oh, you're... No worries. We're used to it. Aren't we, Robbie?
Oh, God.
Well, I mean, Matt, you usually babble a lot also, so...
if you come down to Atlantic City, you'll actually see how inappropriate I am.
Thank you very much, Fred. We appreciate it, man.
And it was great talking to you guys. Thanks.
Well, there it was, Robbie. The entire story from Fred Ottman, Shockmaster, Typhoon, and Tugboat. He seems like the nicest, most friendly guy in America.
You know, it's so different back then, because back then when you're a wrestler, I feel like a lot of guys, you can name four or five gimmicks that they had. And that just doesn't happen as much nowadays. You know what I mean? So it's weird. You really think back and this guy had four different characters on television. It's rare to happen now.
I always remember just him crying on TV about Hulk Hogan. You know, I just thought it was amazing. Yeah, it's very true. Like, having four gimmicks is not something that happens anymore. But somebody who had more than four gimmicks is not the Robert Strauss brand, but is,
hell of a segue.
Thank you very much. Is Brutus the Barber Beefcake? Now, we did a little follow-up with Brutus, and you and I didn't even know really how to approach this, right?
No, we just kind of went into it. I mean, to be fair, he definitely wanted to do it, so, I mean, we gave him the floor, and here it is.
There we go. So with that ringing endorsement, here is Brutus the Barber Beefcake. Hey, well, joining us again, guys, and this is a lot in response to last week's podcast with Brutus the Barber Beefcake. We're joined again. We're lucky enough to be joined. We thank you for joining us again, Brutus. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, man. Just a couple hours in the gym today, working out, trying to get my leg back in shape and get back on my feet here.
So this, I know you talked about that last week. So have you, you just got back in the gym this week?
Yeah, I just went to the gym, to the doctor last week, and he said everything looked good, and that I need to step it up and do more, you know, if I want to have full use of my knee, I need to do more. So, I had, up until then, I've really been going to the gym.
Now,
also doing stuff around the house.
How incredible was it when you did need to get surgery? You did a GoFundMe and you had a lot of support from fans, right?
You sure did. We really appreciate all the support of all the fans. That sure helped a lot. It made it possible.
Awesome, man. Well, hey, let me just ask you this. What do you think the biggest misconception is of Brutus Beefcake?
Jeez, I think, like, I spend time thinking about that. I have no idea.
Well, you don't think a lot of people say things about you that aren't true, or, you hear things and it's completely BS, or they take you the wrong way?
I don't dwell on that kind of shit. you know, I've had a great career. I know I've had a great career. Everybody else knows that I had a great career. That, you know, that's all fine and good. And there's always going to be people who, there's always people who don't like you, and say things, and, you know, that's just part of living and life. And so I don't get hung up on the people that, don't like me and, or say things bad about me. I don't worry about it. I don't think twice about it because I ain't going to let it affect my life one way or the other. It's not worth it. It's not worth a second of my time. I dwell on, you know, the present, you know, everything is, you know, I'm happy, I'm healthy, I'm doing good. And that's all I'm worried about.
Well, that's
my family.
You know, that's definitely like that. Good. That's definitely good to hear, man. You know, and, you know, I think a lot of fans were concerned and, you know, talking about the elephant in the room, you know, last week, I think we caught you on a bad day. And if you want to talk about that a little bit and maybe clear the air a little bit and just let people know, because, you know, people, especially on Twitter, people don't know what the hell's going on in people's lives, and people are human. People go out and have a good time and it's okay. So there was a little concern or, you know, controversy about last week's appearance. What happened last week?
Well, honestly, I've been pretty much homebound. Recovering from this surgery, and so we actually had I had some friends come over. We kind of broke loose a little bit. Guilty of being human being and having too much fun. The only mistake I made was not saying, "Hey guys, like we need to do this tomorrow night because we're just having too much fun now, and now's not the right time." I made a mistake, a personal mistake there.
And, well, now me and Matt even feel bad that we ruined your party and probably really bombarded you when you had friends over and you wasted your time. We didn't mean to do that.
My wife cooked some incredible food, and we were eating and having a good time. And yeah, guilty as charged, having too much fun. I thought the whole thing was supposed to be Thursday to begin with, and then bam, all of a sudden the call came, and I should have said, "Hey guys, you know, let's postpone this thing. It's not like it would be the end of the world," or it hadn't happened sometime before. But that was my mistake. Well, nobody's fault but mine.
Well, we definitely. Oh, that's a great song, Led Zeppelin. We definitely appreciate the fact that you come on and tell us that. Like I said, we wouldn't be here if we weren't huge fans of yours. I'm a huge fan of yours, and we're not gonna like we talked about. We're not gonna have a full show, but a couple of questions, you know, fans had, and just get a little bit, you know, into some stuff for yourself. When you think about those early Brutus Beefcake days, be pre-Barber days, what do you think of? What is your enduring memory from those days?
I was having a great time. Brutus Beefcake, I liked being a heel. It was, you know, it was a mitzvah. You know, I got WWE, big break, New York, Madison Square Gardens, Brutus Beefcake, and it was, you know, it was just super fun. You know, that whole barber thing was completely unannounced. I was never consulted, never told anything about it. It was sprung on me day of, and that was a true test. That was a real, real test. And you know, I just had to switch gears and make it work.
And did you eventually love the character?
Oh yeah, but you know, got a chance. Once you got a chance to build something there, make something of. You know, it's kind of hard to just come out of thin air with stuff, especially a gimmick for the wrestling business that you're going to go worldwide with and like unannounced. I don't know. I don't know. How do you do that? You know, somehow I was able to, with some help from good friends and great support, was able to, turn the page there and start a new chapter in the Bruce Beefcake story. And, it all worked and worked better than I ever imagined.
Now, something we didn't talk about, we touched on last time, we didn't talk about it a bunch, is, you got paired up with Greg Valentine and the Dream Team. You guys were two very top heels in the company. Greg Valentine just off the IC title. You're the up-and-comer who's just comes off WrestleManias, and you're a big deal as well. And you guys are friends to this very day, I believe. What is your relationship like, and what has your relationship with Greg Valentine been important to you over the years?
Greg, I'm a born and raised Florida boy. I used to watch Greg's father when I was a wrestling fan as a kid, Johnny Valentine. Before I ever knew Greg, I watched his dad here. And then I met Greg, I met Greg way before the WWE days, in North Carolina and, on the road, and we were friends. And then the WWF thing, it came about, and then we wound up being paired up, and I think for Greg and for me that was a tremendously great time, for both of us, and as far as that goes, I think our tag team was one of the best ever.
Hey, over the years, when you would wrestle like a lot of local enhancement talent, jobbers, whatever you want to call them, you would cut their hair. Was there any situations where any of the guys had a problem with that, or they tried to get out of it or refuse? And did they get paid extra for doing it?
Occasionally. Well, there was, occasionally, I guess maybe guys would say they didn't want to and stuff. The guys who were smart would grow their hair out and volunteer, because they did get paid a lot extra.
Wow.
They made more for wrestling and getting their hair cut than if they wrestled every time on it, wrestled a match on all four tapings. And they wrestled one match with me and make three times what they made. No, I'm not tooting nothing, honey. I'm just telling her the guy's making money getting their hair cut. So the guys who are smart would be volunteering. Occasionally guys didn't want to get their hair cut, I butchered them. I went out there to make them try to look better. I was out there to get over, and that's the whole name of the deal. So guys who I liked and would work with me in the ring, because you these enhancement matches only a couple of minutes. You don't have much time, and if somebody's laying on their ass and want to do shit or whatever out there, this is my time to shine and not helping. Then when it comes time to get their haircut at the end, I butchered them extra fucking bad, and then they'd be sitting in the chair afterward bawling or yelling or screaming, about it. Or that was just, the other guys would be getting their hair trimmed up, and, they got a good payoff. They were happy as heck.
Now, we've seen a lot of hair matches over the years. A lot of times it's hard to cut, wet hair, and you seem to get it down for a science. What's the secret for giving a haircut after a match? What is your secret?
There's no secret. It's hit or miss. Your hair isn't easy to cut anyway. So, it depends. Sometimes I was using clippers. Sometimes I was using scissors. Sometimes I was using trimmers. There's no secret. I just put them in the sleeper and go to town. Every day is a new day, and it's all different every time.
Did you ever not like somebody and maybe cut a little more extra hair than you had to?
Not really. I get along with everybody, pretty much for many, many years in the business. I haven't really had a lot of problems with anybody to this day.
So Well, I was going to say, how did you end up leaving WWE then at this point? You had a career there, and then what was your exit from there like?
My exit from there, well, after WrestleMania 9, I went to, came back to Florida and started filming a couple of, a movie called Thunder in Paradise, then 22 episodes of a television show called Thunder in Paradise, and multiple other movies in Florida, Vancouver, Montreal, LA, and all over the place. And had a great time.
Well,
great experience.
And then with the WCW, we talked a lot about the Butcher, and I just had a question. I'm sure you had to embrace the characters. As you said, you embraced the character of the barber. You got it over. What was exactly the Zodiac? I've seen the promo a lot. I remember you being the Zodiac. What exactly was the Zodiac character? What was that?
The Zodiac was a character that I invented for a movie called Mr. Nanny, for some scenes we had to shoot. Where wrestler Hulk was having like nightmares and he was getting beat up by a bunch of wrestlers. And there I was. We just didn't want to really have Brutus Beefcake beating up his friend Hulk Hogan in the ring. So I cooked up this get up clothes I had and put the makeup and made this crazy looking wild man that was jumping off the top rope in the movie. And it worked well for the film. So then WCW, they weren't up for a fight with Vince over Brutus Beefcake name. So they kept changing my name when they came up with this character. The Dungeon of Doom could always use some more guys. The Zodiac was perfect fit for the Dungeon of Doom. So, I was picking up a paycheck. That's what it's all about.
Well, it definitely got you in, and you know, with the WCW years, you know, you had that Zodiac, and you had the Booty Man, and then I think the most promising character, we talked about it a little bit last week, was a Disciple, and the incredible shape you got in the character. Where did you see the Disciple going, and how did Ultimate Warrior not working out affect that?
Well, I've always felt that the Disciple thing was could have went anywhere. That it got a chance to go if it was given a chance, but it was never given a chance. And then that whole thing with the Ultimate Warrior not signing a deal, and then they paint me with all this Ultimate Warrior colors, and then Ultimate Warrior leaves. So it didn't help me at all. It only really hurt me. It was a complete disaster.
Right.
It was hard to foresee.
Go ahead.
No, sorry, go, Matt.
Well, were you lobbying for to do more with? I'm sure you were. You were trying to get on camera. You were lobbying and talking to people about getting on screen more and doing more of the Disciple after the Warrior. And you talked about how kind of Bischoff got in the way a little bit. What did Bischoff not see in Brutus that, in you, that we all saw? How come you think he didn't really want to get you on TV as much as you should have been?
Really don't know. He hasn't said, but he's never been a Brutus fan. He's a friend of Hulkster's. But I guess, I never saw the whole, what his deal was that made him any kind of a wrestling guy. He never been in the ring, never did anything. I never got what everybody thought he was so great. His skills were that made him qualified to do anything with the wrestling business. But for some reason, everybody thought he was some guru or whatever. So he didn't like me, and he took every opportunity that he could to, you know, take it out on me for that he didn't like me. He had fired me once, or at least once, if not twice, while I was working there. And then, you know, so, you know, I never did anything to the guy. I don't know. You know, maybe it was because I was a friend of Hulk's, and who knows.
Hey, man, well, thank you. We know you're a super busy guy, and you came back on a second week in a row, so we really appreciate it. But is there anything, any last thing you want to say to the fans or promoters that want to book you or any social media plugs you want to do?
Well, you know, brutuspeak.com. I got a book out, a new book out, lots of merchandise and stuff right there at brutuspeak.com. You know, I'm doing, you know, a few things here and there. Whenever I can, you know, and I'm really grateful. I want to tell all my fans, thank you once again, for all their support, especially on the GoFundMe, because this knee operation, I need it badly. It's been a couple of years coming. And then finally, actually being able to, you know, realize this dream of getting my knee fixed and you know, with the people from the GoFundMe, it was amazing. It was just amazing response to the fans, and you know, and I love the fans, and I just want all of them all to know, you know, how much I appreciate the support.
Well, we definitely appreciate you, and like you said, you have a book out, and guys, if you are someone who enjoys wrestling books, this is a vital, essential need to your collection. I enjoyed reading it. I think it's a great book. And if people want to get your book, how do they order it?
Right to brutuspeakpig.com. And it's very simple. Anybody, we send them we're sending books around the globe on a daily basis. My wife, Missy, has been great help. Huge part of getting the book done. And then making it happen and getting them out to the fans and everything. She's running around to the post office and doing things on a daily basis, you know, going out of her way to try to get them out there to all the fans. And so, you know, we respond right to the fans as soon as possible.
All right, well, there it is. I mean, Matt, we had him on. And let me get – now, I guess now that I'm thinking about it, it sounds maybe a little different than last week, but I don't think it sounds much different.
Well, you know,
as far as his tone, I mean, as far as just the way he sounded.
Yeah, I'm just going to say that no one can ever say we did not interview Brutus Beefcake. And like I said, the book is great. You know, definitely check that up and draw your own conclusions, draw your own opinions, you know, and enjoy our archives as well at whyitended.com. And you can watch our clips on YouTube. There'll be some more going up soon on whereitended.com, and make sure to pick up a Why It Ended shirt at prowrestlingtees.com/whyitended. And also, don't forget, go to StarCast. If you can't go, make sure to order it on Fight TV, because our show will be on there. But also, if you can, get out to StarCast and see our live show. It's going to be cray cray, as you kids say, Robbie.
And then, of course, don't forget Robbie E. Impact on Twitter, Real Robbie E. on Instagram, and then Matt Coons, Matt Coon Music, but you probably don't want to follow him.
No, you definitely don't want to follow me. But I'll tell you what you do want to follow is Why It Ended.
Damn, those segues are good.